Welcome to the Declarations of War podcast. This is episode 36. Thanks for tuning in, you guys. Our hosts this time around are Alexei of Card, Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
Cass Dyson.
Howdy.
And one of NAR's biggest FCs, Levitine.
Good day, everyone.
First things first, I'd like to give a shout out to NAR member Wacktopia for the fantastic new website, fleetup.com. It's a must for Alliance level FCs. If you haven't checked it out, definitely give it a look. Fleet-up.com. It's incredible. It lets you put all your fits, all your doctrines, lets you rate the priority of ships you'd rather have. Pilots can throw their API in there and see which ships they can fly, what they need to train. It's just a really powerful tool, so go check it out.
Hey guys, Turtle here. I want to give a shout out to Sindel Pellion. I might have called her new tattoo a tramp stamp on Twitter, and I don't think she appreciated it. So sorry.
What's her new tattoo?
I'm not even 100% sure. I think it's like supposed to be cerebral implant plugs, like down her neck and spine or something. And so all I could see in my head was tramp stamp.
Hot.
Jess Dyson here. I'd like to thank all my NA trainers who do a great job and make me look good.
Levitine here. Two shout-outs. One to Sloane Awesome, Mimono and McLeod, originally in AAA, now in AAA, against all anomalies. He went from a complete newbie to a fleet commander in a 0-0 alliance and makes me very, very proud. I'd also like to give a shout-out to old Noir people, Dansara and Mini Dansara, Crucible and Yoshi. They all went on to bigger, richer, better pastures. Maybe, who knows?
Well, richer, bigger, certainly. Better. Whoa, let's calm down. I don't know that I want to concede that ground quite yet. No, I'm kidding, of course. Pandemic Legion's awesome. They would ever like to come back, though. Just saying. Crucible, Dansara, Yoshi. The covers are turned down. Before we go on, I'd like to give a shout out to our sponsor, EVE Timecode. Right now, they're having two sales. Buy 14 EVE Timecodes, get one free. And if you type in Fall Fun 2012 gives you a 5% discount on all purchases over $64. It's a really great site. It helps support all kinds of community events. So if you're going to be buying plexes, buy them from evetimecode.com. If you'd like to advertise your corp, third party, website, service, whatever, on Declarations of War, you can contact me. Alexei of Card, either on our forums, narmarks.com, or through the website. Also, you can catch me in-game. I'm pretty good at my mail by this point. Moving on to some contract wrap-ups. After our LOSEC excursions in Uletta, we pretty much had to spend a week and a half recovering sec status, because we were very naughty, and pretty much the entire corp couldn't get into high sec anymore. So we went up to Tenerifus, thank you to Echoes of Nowhere for their hospitality, and we ran this sort of like six jump loop up there and got everybody's security status back. Lave actually pioneered security status for science. It was pretty cool.
Well, we can't have us not going into high sec now.
Yeah, that was a pain in the ass.
Indeed.
The only other contract that we had was an assassination contract, or that's what it was planned to be anyways. The target was a guy named Sublime Rage, who was a notable Amar station camper, who had a bounty on his head to the tune of something like 8 billion plus ISK.
Seven.
So, okay, yeah, seven-ish. And then he was also very active in the station undock, which made him a juicy target if you could get him down into an egg. So the employer was very adamant about us trying this. It's not a contract that we had done. So our approach to it was kind of novel in that there was a lot of discussion as to how to proceed with it. Six or seven forum pages, and we kind of got a plan worked out. Started to get assets in play in high sec once our security statuses were fixed. And then the target ended up auditing himself. So I think we still had one op after that to see if he was logged on, but I don't think he was.
It generally kind of fell apart, really, because the target ended up being quite busy in real life, and so as our assets moved in position, as we got people ready to smash him, people ready to smash his off
off grid tem boosting Legion. He never logged in.
Yeah, when I say this guy was sitting on the undock, what I mean is he was sitting on the undock in a full slave clone in a plated Hurricane with Tech 3 boosters and remote reps. So, yeah, he was to the gills.
He was a tough nut.
Yeah, but he was never logged on. He was, like Lave said, he was logged on maybe 6 hours that entire week or something. It was, so we didn't have anything to shoot at. It was kind of sad.
And then the ending came when he got him... I believe that the situation is he actually potted himself for his bounty.
Yeah.
According to our employer. And our employer talked to him about it and then informed him that we were supposed to have assassinated him. So at that point we were like, oh, well, now he knows we're coming. And he doesn't have this bounty. And the employer was like, yeah, you guys are done. But, you know, we appreciate your efforts. So, just a whole bunch of circumstances converging, making that not really work out. But it was notable in being the only assassination contract that we've ever even really attempted, because it was the only one that was really worth it. I mean, if it had succeeded, it would have been an $8 billion payout. It's huge.
Yeah, and I don't think I would shy away from another one in the future. I just think that we would have to do probably a little more recon on the target itself before we actually figured out how to, you know, charge the contract.
Things like this are also going to change with the introduction of Retribution, which I think we're going to go into later on.
Oh yeah, bounty hunting, baby. Alright, this week in Mercs, we've got some unfortunate news. The Ghost Army, which was a sort of low-level Empire low-sec group, has unfortunately had to drop from the channel. They're not huge, but their guys were pretty active in the channel and in the community generally, Wolf Colma's crew. And they're not in a position to accept some contracts now. They accepted a whole bunch of new players. They're just not up to snuff. So they're going to devote themselves fully to faction warfare, training their new guys. And, you know, perhaps we'll see them come back in the future.
Was that a choice that they made themselves?
Yes. The Merc Contracts channel doesn't list people based on their ability. You know, based on their, like, what they are. If they're mercs and if they're reputable, they get listed. We don't make a judgment on who's better than who or who's worth it or not worth it. You know, that's up to employers to make. So Wolf contacted me and was like, hey, you know, just take us off the list for now. We're not really in a position to accept contracts. So I said, all right. I'm sure they'll be back, particularly when the faction warfare donut hole closes. You know, there's going to be some changes in the faction warfare dynamic. There's going to be a lot less NPCing targets to look for. Probably some people that were in it just for the money are going to be leaving. The only other news of note for the Merc Contracts channel, Clan Fian has joined Transmission Lost, which is a big, like, wormhole alliance, sort of on the level of a K-162 or an Exhale. I contacted them to see if this was going to affect their mercenary status, and they told me that they are still going to accept corporate-level wormhole contracts. So if you still need someone to, you know, take out a medium or small tower, if you still need someone to save your tower, you can still contact Clan Fian and Cypra, and they will probably take your contract. If we're not available, of course. Moving on to some Eve news. There's been some shakeups in the Dot Brothers Coalition. Dot Bros had a little bit of drama, particularly NC Dot. The two co-leaders of that alliance had a bit of a falling out, and the one with the executorship took like 800 bill from their wallet and kicked the other one out.
Claimed that they put the 800 bill back, but...
Well, yeah, I have no idea. What we do know is that Vince Draken sort of won out, I guess. He is now in sole control of NC Dot. And Wicked Princess is now in Black Legion, interestingly enough. So I wonder if or how that would affect the dynamic between NC Dot and Black Legion. My instinct is that perhaps not much, because I think the Black Legion leadership and the NC Dot leadership are pretty tight at this point after fighting goons for so long. And I doubt they would bring Wicked Princess in and put her in, like, immediately in a position of power. So probably there will be a little bad blood between her and NC Dot and vice versa, but I don't think there's going to be alliance-level drama. But, you know, never know.
Yeah, you still have that kind of overwhelming greater enemy for the two of them, don't you, in Goonswarm. Maybe when goons are... If when goons are gone, they'll duke it out, but...
Yeah, if and when indeed. Speaking of alliance-level drama, Red Overlord, which is the... I guess the second or third most powerful alliance in SoCo behind AAA. I don't want to say fail Cascade, but damn close. All their English-speaking corps have left. They've all blued the Honey Badger Coalition, and the Alliance has dropped Sov, or is in the process of dropping Sov, in pretty much their entire holdings in Fifth Obolus and Paragon Soul. So pretty much half the Alliance is gone. They're losing their systems. AAA is not lifting a finger to support them, defend them, or recover that Sov in any way. So it looks like AAA is not really going to be helping their allies in the south, or maybe they just figure that this is Red Overlord's internal problem, that they're falling apart, and that AAA shouldn't be getting involved.
Well, in from what I can tell, in the beginning it was an internal problem with Red Overlord, and they had two Titans that ended up being aborted because AAA wouldn't come, or couldn't or wouldn't come help defend them. And, you know, at some point, I mean, what are you going to do if you're Red Overlord at that point? Like, then turn to AAA again and be like, hey, can you help us defend our space, when they wouldn't come for two Titans of all things? Like, no, at this point, AAA has gotten themselves in such a hole that breaking off and blueing the HBC or the CFC is probably, like, the best option you have in EVE at this point.
Yeah, there's some pretty good shenanigans going on. I mean, I'm not really sure what AAA's leadership was thinking. Not to support the allies there. And that you know, changes things up tremendously in that region. Just absolutely flips it.
Yeah, and the 4-0 defenses previously to now, Red Overlord was always the second largest group. Like, it would be AAA, then it'd be Roll in terms of turnout. So losing your biggest ally in that way, I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, each alliance has to deal with their own internal matters, and there's a lot to be said for that approach, but at the same time, you kind of have to look at your strategic outlook and realize, man, you can't afford to have this alliance collapse. Maybe you need to take some steps.
And we can already see the fallout. Just recently, 4-0 has now fallen, and the next step for the bandwagon is now towards the heart of AAA territory, which is GE. And I would say with the leadership thing, it's been a long time coming. The cracks have been forming for a while with AAA. You generally find that, I don't want to kind of be too bad on them, because there are great people in AAA, and I know people in AAA who are great. But you generally find that there's a lot in the leadership, which can sometimes, if you're not a high-level person or not in AAA, you're a nobody. And that, unfortunately, has been exploited both from within by kind of outside forces and propaganda, and just from the general show of things, and they're getting steamrolled by a bigger entity right now.
Love and tolerance is always going to win.
I mean, you're already fighting uphill with the, you know, Pandemic Legion, backed up by the sheer numbers of a test alliance and all the supporting alliances coming behind them now. But to add more stuff on top of that by causing all kinds of drama within your alliances, or your coalition alliances, by not supporting those alliances that have been supporting you, by, you know, sidelining your membership that's not at the top of the top. Like, it's just a series of poor choices, I think, that are catching up with AAA right now. And we'll see how hard and how fast that process happens. I don't know if HBC will do sort of a Goonswarm style lightning campaign down here. They seem to be content to just slowly pick away at AAA and grind them out, but unlike up north, which is also a slow grind, AAA doesn't seem to be able to win the fights, or at least have one time zone that's really working for them, the way NCDOT and Black Legion are. You know, Dot Brothers are actually having some success in the Australian time zone, and they're forming fleets that they're not nearly as big as the Goonswarm fleets, but they're enough to challenge them, and they're able to force them off some strategic objectives sometimes. when was the last time AAA's been able to do that? It's been like at least a month. And ever since the war has switched to being sort of AAA preemptively putting pressure on HBC by attacking Quirius to, you know, Initiative and Raiden joining up with Honey Badger Coalition, and then Honey Badger's putting preemptive pressure on AAA by attacking 4-0. I don't know that AAA's really been able to do anything, really. They just seem to be in a perpetual state of reacting to things that HBC is doing.
English speaking, so I'm assuming that's got to be like U.S. and Euros. I mean, that's two time zones. That's assumably taking a hit there, and that maybe because we had heard, you know, the CFC and HBC, more so the CFC having trouble in their U.S. time zones where they used to be really dominant. You know, so maybe this is that leg up that they really need to start rickrolling the U.S. time zone.
I think the strongest of the three time zones, like if you're an alliance that has it. The Australian time zone, because who else has one? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
it's so random.
I think that's what's going on up north with Black Legion and that crew. They just happen to have a really good Australian time zone, and Goons doesn't. And they're able to get so much done in that window of time where Goons can't apply the same level of numbers they apply throughout the rest of the day, that it's causing some significant problems and is preventing them from being in a state of perpetual defense. Like, every once in a while, they can go out and strike a POS or SBU, assist them, and force Goons to react to that when they don't really want to. AAA doesn't have that capability. AAA is almost entirely Russian and US time zone. And frankly, HBC's got it covered, especially now that Soko's losing so many numbers.
And there's also, you know, how many, like up north, I mean, how many people want to do alarm clock ops all the time? That just wears you out.
Well, that's sort of the big question with these four coalitions going at it. Which of them's going to wear out first? If CFC wears out up north and, you know, NCDOT and those guys stabilize a bit, maybe they'll come down and help AAA. Frankly, I doubt it, considering how AAA dismissed Nulli Secunda. And Nulli Secunda being a big player in Dot Brothers. I don't see that happening. But you never know. And if HBC tires, maybe AAA will go help Solar Fleet, or will go help up north against Goons. I can guarantee you, though, if either the Dot Brothers or AAA start to get fatigued, and either the CFC or the HBC get the upper hand and press it all the way to victory, that the CFC or the HBC will come down and help the other, whichever one is struggling. Because neither of them can really afford to have the wars go on as long as they're going on.
AAA's usual tactic is, in past, been known to kind of fall back to the NPC regions of the Stain area. Though in this particular thing, they're losing so many allies, they're losing so much, that when they do, and I think it is a question of when, they're not really putting up that big of a fight, but we will see when the battles and the time has come down for GE and a lot of the other major systems. Well, if they do come out on the bottom, if they will actually be able to get back to what they were.
Okay, some other news, unrelated to 0-0, but yeah, actually maybe it is. Plex prices have really spiked. The average price has increased 90 mil in the last month and 180 mil from the last year. This is having some interesting effects. Causes could be anything from speculation to the new $10,000 tournament to increased pressure from these warring groups to fund their war effort. I mean, it could be a whole bunch of stuff.
I think the metagame really got the better of this one, because when you look at the average moving number of plexes on and GM market for, say, any given day, it's a massive number. Like, a lot bigger than you would think. And so I think that a large part of this is the metagame kind of getting at itself. Yeah, so when you look at it, 90 mil in the last month compared to 180 mil in the last year. So 50% of your yearly price increases come in the last month. So you kind of look at what is going on at this around this time, the announcement of that tournament, the end of Power of Two, Plex sales and stuff. All the rich people that control all the Plex, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, look at CCP. They've been fucking with shit the whole time, and they've been trying to do this increase the supply to drop the price thing for a little bit now, and it's failing where it had worked in the past.
Or perhaps it had worked, but it was an artificial success, you know? Sort of like the way government subsidies and things like that work in the real world. You know, they were artificially lowering the price. They stopped the programs that were doing it, and now it's getting back to where it would normally be. That could also be what's happening. But I think you're right about the speculation, especially since the tournament was announced and that it would cost 20 plex per team to enter. You saw an immediate increase in plex prices because people were thinking that there was going to be incredibly high demand, and of course there was.
Well, I have to say, as somebody who has used plexes all throughout the era, I got away from that just in the nick of time because those prices are ridiculously high. they just are. As somebody who has been using plexes for a very long time for keeping the game alive, it really starts to if you only have a limited amount of time to play, it really starts making you have to think about just how much time and effort you're going to put in to keep the game going.
Well, some of these people are acting like it's their God-given right to sub their account with Plex, and I never really saw it that way. It was a really cool thing when you bought it with real money and you sold it for ISK, because it solved that whole problem of buying ISK, in violation of the EULA. And then with all the passive ISK faucets, I think people really got a little bit jaded and spoiled with paying for their accounts with Plexes. So, you know what, frankly, as somebody that doesn't really sub their account with Plex, I'd love to see the price skyrocket, because then every time I buy one, I'm going to buy two. It's going to be more money for CCP, more ISK for me, and I don't sub with Plexes anyways.
Well, I would definitely agree that I think a lot of people have gotten spoiled with it. I basically started doing the math and just said, I don't feel like grinding. That's not my thing. I don't want to come up with that, all that ISK each month. Found a way to play. But I'm happy to see that CCP has available for us. But a lot of the whining, what I'm hearing is just whining. And that is something I can't get behind because, how many other games out there do something like this? I mean, seriously.
I think it'll be interesting to see, because I think Turtle is spot on. People got very comfortable with the idea of, just being able to pay for EVE with the Plex and nothing else.
Oh, yeah.
And what's going to happen now that that's changing? Like, if people find that they can't, or they're simply not willing to do the grind to pay for the new Plex prices, what impact is that going to have on the population? Which parts of the population is it going to affect the most? Is this going to be dropping the numbers of, like, say, 00 fleets because they have to spend more time NPCing, less time fighting? Is it going to be hurting the incursion runners or, burning them out because they just can't incursion fast enough to make up the money? Like, what's... And when the LP thing hits with Faction Warfare, that could also be a problem too, because that's going to be cutting a lot of people's incomes, especially people that have an eye on the metagame and min-maxing and that sort of thing. Faction Warfare is the best ISK per hour you can make now. When that goes away, where do those people go?
I don't know. I was kind of hoping the price would stay up around like 650 or 600 rather, because I'm going to get a couple at the end of this week.
No, that's the other side of it. Eventually the market will correct itself. People being like, man, I can get that much ISK for only 15 bucks?
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it, is the market will correct itself, which is why I have such a big problem with... I guess I would be more upset if it was like a direct intervention of the market. I guess you can kind of defend the sales on Plex and stuff and say, well, CCP's just trying to make money. But I don't think you can deny that a secondary objective of that was to increase supply, and I really think they should just kind of let it fall where it may, because it is going to correct itself. People aren't going to pay a billion ISK per Plex. I mean, it's just not. Or, there's going to be so many people looking to sell them that the market gets flooded on its own.
Well, eventually it will flood. Eventually people are going to flood this market, as the disparity between a real life subscription and a Plex price becomes more apparent, and it will stabilize. I think CCP have always had a hand in something like this. As long as they don't directly get into the system and tinker with it, prices will stabilize, prices will go, prices will fall. I think we're just seeing one of the many ways the market can shake up and affect everyone. It may be that CCP wants to keep the price low enough as to not discourage the newer player from coming in and then not being able to afford the Plex, because suddenly week on week it's rising by tens and twenties of millions. I don't think we'll see that. And I think it's good if we don't marginalize the newer players, or those that maybe don't have the time to put enough time to kind of grind and go out for your regular fleet.
Well, they've always had the central bank, which is a regulatory entity within EVE. It's headed up by their economics department. And then it reports to the CSM. We see how much they do at the summits. They're directly interfering a lot less than their tinfoily critics would believe. But then there's that other kind of influence, like the Power of Two sales and things like that, all these different Plex sales they're doing, which doesn't really fall under that, but does artificially affect the supply. Like any company that sells a product, it's within their rights to put it on sale. You know, they can charge whatever they want for it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, it's just something that players have to deal with.
Yeah, it, like I said, it gets back to the metagame, and at some point you just kind of got to remove yourself from it and cough up $15 a month. Or even, you know what, pay for it by the year. It's phenomenally cheaper.
Yeah, $10 a month, I think, if you're going full year. Related to the money supply, CCP Sriegs and the EVE security team, rather, are getting a lot tougher on RMT and botting. Botting in particular. They've pretty much slammed RMT really hard, and they're keeping up with what they're doing. But now they've announced a slight policy change. When they find botting groups, they're going to nuke the POSs that are holding them, especially in 00. And they're going to start going after alliances that are allowing botting in their space. The CSM has been asking, well, the non-Russian part of the CSM has been asking for this for quite a while. And I'm happy to see that it's finally going to go through. It's just really not... It should not ever have been acceptable for an alliance to say, hey, botting groups, just pay us a little bit and you can use this system here. Hey, other botting team, you can use this system there. And then have that alliance leadership not pay the price for that.
Specific targets in mind, too. I think he said specifically less than 10 alliances they were looking at.
I wouldn't be surprised. We all know who they are. Everybody that watches 00 knows which of the alliances are like actively promoting botting. Everybody knows, just like everybody knew the RMTing alliances. But, you know, Skreeks, to his credit, wants to wait for evidence and actual investigation before he nukes people. It gives them every chance. He has a warning system, the whole thing. So, if they continue on with it, it's really their hubris more than anything else that's doing it.
As long as Shriegs gets me on there so that he can kill every one of those towers to 0.1% and I can just finish them off in a Reaper, I'll be happy.
Kill Malhor.
Well, honestly, I mean, this is some of the best news out of CCP this year, in my opinion. Just flat out, having been around quite a few alliances that, you know, shall we say, were underhanded in their dealings. I'm absolutely happy as hell to see this.
I think Alec had it right there. We all know, present tense, who does it. And the sad truth, there's a lot of people doing it. And I think the slow burn approach is going to work quite good, in that you're going to find that as warnings start to come in, the alliances with any bit of credibility or a bit of self-respect are going to find ways of getting essentially the bad bits of their alliance out, like cutting out cancer. They're going to get them out there. And that's going to have an effect on the market in the slow burn as well, since we were talking about markets and the way prices go up and all the other things. But the RMT is something that has to be removed. There's no choice about it. And so many times we have been on contract, we have jumped into a system to see dozens of
hulks immediately puzz up with speed that you simply can't match, and you simply can't get them. The guys who are in anomalies, the guys who are just going around in the faction fit, the office fit nightmares that you can't kill because every time someone enters in local, they just auto-warp. That has to go.
I think it's cute that blowing up their assets on Trank in, like, you know, really like how you would blow up somebody's tower is the easiest way they can go about it.
Yeah, As opposed to what?
Well, there's got to be some back-end thing they can do on the dev side, or the server side, rather, to just remove it from game. I'm sure it's going to be messy as hell, but that's what I'm saying. I think it's cute.
I think they'll do both. I think there'll be pressure. There'll be pressure from the back. There'll be pressure where the players can see it. And when we see it is when we see towers disappear and accounts disappear.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be banning accounts.
Well, from what I'm reading, you know, quoting Scriggs here, you know, he says, we won't waste time with fleets. We blow up assets because, hilariously enough, technologically, that's the cleanest way to get rid of them, not because of the jollies. I think that's awesome also because, you know, some people might, in an alliance, especially if they're large enough, some people might not really not know. They might suspect, but have that's it, they suspect. Once you actually start seeing kill mails or mails coming in, you know, that might be something, you know, to actually get these guys moving to actually clean up their alliance.
One thing's for sure, the GM or the CCP that does that is going to have the best Eve kill statistics of all time.
I think we all know that CCP Streaks just likes pressing the red button. We knew about it in the Alliance tournament. I think this is just more of the same.
Oh my god, before they tranquilized him that first time around in the Alliance tournament, oh, he was just crazy.
Alright, now let's move into some CSM coverage. As we talked about a little bit earlier, Retribution has been announced. It was announced at the Veto Gathering by CCP Unifex, and it was followed up by release of the Features page and a pretty cool video dev blog, a very high-level, admittedly, overview of the new expansion by CCP Ripley, who I've talked to and is really cool.
Alex thinks you're cute, too, by the way.
Hey. Oh, I can't help it, man. I'm weak.
He's a nice guy. He likes managing corporations, pew-pewing in spaceships.
I'll manage your corporation.
Are you talking to me?
Maybe.
I don't know what you take me for.
So many great changes are coming out with this. A lot of them have been put out already, changes to balancing and stuff like that. But there were some new details. Now there's going to be all kinds of dev blogs coming out. They've been coming out at a pretty rapid clip as well. Talking about the new features in more detail than have been talked about before. CSM had not all, but most of this information ahead of time. But, you know, obviously we had to wait for when CCP was ready to talk about the expansion with the features page and all that sort of fluffy good stuff that marketing likes to do. But now we're able to talk about it a little more freely, particularly the bounty hunting feature, which is our stakeholder project. It's going good and it's going bad. The bounty hunting feature, as it was released to players, I can tell you is much improved than the original that was being put out. A lot of the core mechanics are the same, but certainly the direction and some of the details were sharpened thanks to the CSM's feedback. There's still a bit to go, I think, and that's where the bad is coming in. It's sort of becoming very hard to move CCP from any of their decisions now that the expansion's coming up to its release date pretty quickly now. It feels like a lot more quickly than it looks on the calendar, and you know, we're trying to get feedback into them in time that they can listen to it and take advantage of it. That process is not going as smoothly as we hoped.
How did it come to be that bounty hunting was like your stakeholder issue? Because I'd think that Crime Watch would be the more attractive of the two if you have to stick that label on it.
The two are intertwined, if I remember correctly.
The two are intertwined. The decision was both CCP Unifex, the senior producer, and I think the team itself. I'm pretty sure they had effectively like a buy-in kind of thing. They went like, hey, we need a team that's willing to volunteer to be the CSM stakeholder who's going to be kind of thing. And, you know, for the experiment, we had to pick just one. You know, the CSM certainly didn't get to pick it. So I think it was John Lander and probably the team itself got together and decided that it'd be all right. Communication with the team has not been quite to the level we'd hoped, but it's being worked on, and hopefully we will be able to talk about it in more detail and give you all the nitty-gritty, the good and the bad. Definitely a lot of room for improvement, but not a total waste of time is currently how I'm feeling about it, and I'll give you another update on that in 2 weeks when we record the next podcast.
For what it's worth, the bounty system itself in its current incarnation is just a complete dead stick, and I think anything that shapes the system will undoubtedly make it a more interesting place, particularly with the new changes to Crime Watch and the aggression stuff, which looks really interesting.
It's totally not a sexy feature, like, oh, we're changing the rules governing aggression in EVE.
It's a totally sexy feature, dude, because tell me one thing in EVE that's more ambiguous than the Crime Watch system right now. Like, it is so fucking confusing until you figure it out, and then when you do figure it out, it's so hit or miss because your timers are so generic and, like, just, they don't explain anything, and I'm super pumped. It's going to be great for new players. It's going to be great for vets. It's a sexy feature.
It's actually going to cut down the number of lessons for Noir Academy by about a quarter. I don't know, maybe?
Yeah, right.
Well, anything CCP can do to streamline things, too, I mean, is good for everybody when you start talking about server load, etc.
It's also going to be interesting to see what it does to the low-sec dynamic. I mean, you're only going to get kill rights on you if you pod somebody. And security guns are only going to shoot you until you warp off. If you warp back on, they're not going to shoot you anymore unless you do something else to cause them to shoot you.
And particularly, yeah, the changes to the neutral RR. Thank God.
Woohoo! And the changes to just regular RR when they're on gates. They can't rep, or they can't jump faster than the ship that they're repping. That's going to change a lot of gate fighting on the small gang level. I think for the better. Instead of having, you know, these logistics ships orbiting the gate, hugging it for dear life, and as soon as they get shot, they just jump through and then reapproach and jump back in. Now you're going to see them being more interested in pulling range and setting up the battlefield ahead of time. And they're actually going to be killable as opposed to a waste of time when you primary them.
Yep.
You've also got the changes. I think they began to be exploited quite recently, whereby pirates would have an orca sat on a gate and they just drop new ships for them. And they're now changing the dynamics so that if you're under that kind of aggression, you can't leave. You can't, I think it's change your ship or exit your ship?
Yeah, you cannot eject or switch ships. Or store your ship.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, and this will have, some impact on, like, triage carrier fighting as well. You won't be able to, like, swap your battleship for a heavy interdictor at the drop of a hat. You'll still be able to do it, you'll just have to de-aggress for 60 seconds. So, I think that's a fair compromise for fixing some of the gate camping problems. And finally, before we go, a little bit of Noir history as part of our rotating segments. Today I'm going to talk about the story behind us joining Trinity Nova Alliance. Trinity Nova Alliance at the time, 2008, was, I would say, the biggest name in small gang warfare. It was them and Repo. And they were a former Kia Alliance member. Kia was one of the big three at the time, right behind Mercenary Coalition. I would say they were the only alliance really worth talking about in terms of that era of EVE mercenaries. And Trinity Nova had a reputation for being like sterling professionals, great rep, great attitude, all that sort of stuff. So Noir at the time was maybe 10-12 people strong. We had just come off a contract in Providence, beefing up the killboard stats of a Providence resident to make them a little more politically powerful in those circles. But we were not doing well with small contracts against other Empire fighters, like those 10-15-man griefing corps that like to do the undocked games and all that stuff, and we were just running into a wall over and over and over again. So I contacted Vicar Fell, who was the leader of Trinity Nova, and said, "Do you guys do training?" And sure enough, they did. And I negotiated a training contract for them to teach us how to be better Empire fighters. Basically, what were we doing wrong? How could we fix it? That sort of stuff. That contract started, and the first thing they did was split us up into two groups. And it was the Trinity Nova guys versus the Noir guys with like one or two Trinity Nova people in the channel, you know, listening in and stuff. Well, it was a war deck. And we went at it in Tech 1 cruisers. And we beat them three times straight, our team. And they were dumbfounded. And then I was talking to Vicar a little bit more, and then I happened to meet one of their head guys at the meetup in Philadelphia. And we talked about the contract, how it was going, we talked about, you know, what Trinity Nova does, what Noir does. Get back, day or two after that meetup, talk to Vicar Fell again, and he just tells me straight up, "Look, your problem isn't that you don't know stuff, your problem is experience. You know, there's not a lot we can teach you that you don't already know. You guys have a lot of potential, you just need more experience to realize it." And then they brought us on board as their first partner corp. And from there they picked up another one, another ex-Kia group. And then together, we were the new Trinity Nova Alliance. We were, I want to say that it might have been the top at the time because there was no Pandemic Legion. Not in a mercenary form anyway. MC was gone. All the other bigums are gone. It was like us and Repo were the top two. Mercenaries and Eve at the time. And Noir really took advantage of it. We threw ourselves into their fleets, learning everything we could like little sponges. And eventually, I can talk about this, I think, for the next piece of Noir history, since I don't want us to go on too long here. But our first big contract was against Bruce, Brutally Clever Empire. And the difference between Noir before that contract and after that contract was like night and day in terms of our piloting skill. And I'll talk about that contract and the arc of us joining Trinity Nova and eventually leaving Trinity Nova on the next Noir history. This has been Declarations of War Podcast, Episode 36. Thanks for listening, you guys. Don't forget to go to declarationsofwar.com's main page to participate in the show polls, leave a comment on the episode, and please kindly donate to us to help keep this podcast going. We are a user-supported podcast. We really appreciate anything that you guys give us, even if it's $1 a month, whatever. It'd be very appreciated. If you're listening to us on iTunes, 5-star us, man. Leave a positive review. We'd really appreciate it. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir.com, and apply to join us or Noir Academy on the forums at www.noirmerks.com. Let's forget it again.
Your traveler.